Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to episode 142 of Till Death Do Us Part.
And we have not parted yet.
And I'm Melissa.
And I'm Daniel. We have not parted.
Good news, we're still married.
I think that's what I was getting at.
I hope so. I hope you were. How was your week, darling?
Good.
It's getting hot here, you guys. Summer is creeping in. Big time.
Here's the thing.
What?
This happens. It goes up and down. And then we get teasers, like this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's nice. 97? Holy. And then 101?
It was 101 today.
Jesus. And then tomorrow it's going to cool off to 90.
Perfect.
Next week, 70s.
What I saw
that.
What
the hell is going on?
No wonder we have allergies.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on.
What?
This is a blessing.
How?
There's no disguise. It's just a blessing. Every year, people turn on their air conditioners because it goes nice, hot.
Oh my God.
Right?
Hot, my eardrums.
Horrifically hot, and then that's it.
Okay.
Not as bad as Phoenix, but, and everyone goes, my AC doesn't work. I didn't have any idea.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Well, guess what? You had 48 hours of a trial period to see if you're ready for the long stretch.
Meaning, are you ready to have your air conditioner on 24 hours
exactly.
a day?
Exactly. Not 24. 13 and a half.
Okay, Daniel turns ours off.
We haven't needed it.
No, I mean during the summer.
We don't turn it off.
Well, it goes off at night.
No, I don't. I have a thermostat set. It is what it is.
What is the thermostat set at?
Usually between, it's either 77 or 78.
Our sister-in-law hates
funny?
Coming to visit.
Okay, hold on.
Because she says we
hold
keep
on.
Our house at an outdoor temperature.
Yeah, well, whatever. Okay, but I know many, many people throughout town and they keep their AC at like 80.
Oh my gosh.
No,
everyone
because,
I know keeps theirs at like 72.
Well, they're rich.
Oh, okay.
The difference is like $200 to $300 a month.
Yeah.
So if you're maxed out living paycheck to paycheck,
mm-hmm.
I love that everyone is so quick to just suggest you turn your air conditioner down to 74 and have it never turn off. Great. Then give me an extra $500 a month and we will run the AC all the time.
Yeah, no thanks.
Anyway.
I'll just take cold showers.
No, but I try and like open up if it's cool at night. You know, there's
he
stuff
does. He'll wake
do.
Up at like 2 o'clock in the morning
yeah.
and open windows
it's
and put fans.
It's free cool air. And
yeah.
then the house
at least
is,
you do it.
The house is pretty well insulated. So if we can get the house cool and you close it up, it will stay that temperature throughout the whole day. And then it doesn't, not until probably the late afternoon, it really starts to warm up. And then you got to run the AC. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
I don't even know why we're talking about it.
I don't know either. Neither does any of our 11 listeners. They're like, get on to it, folks.
Okay.
Daniel, you got some factoids for me?
Yeah, learn how to fix your own air conditioner.
Are you saying that to me?
No.
Oh.
I don't know.
Thought you were being a little snappy there, sir.
I was, because you're like snappy at me.
I am not.
Well, why don't
you?
He doesn't turn the air conditioner on.
You just are very sensitive about that.
You're going to be excited when we get an $800 electric bill.
Oh my gosh, stop. Just tell me your factoids.
I was going to talk about lawnmowers.
Were you really?
So, trying to save money. No, just don't have it. So I'm trying to, I'm a lawnmower man, right?
You've been the gardener
for
years.
I have. So I was going to mow backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So would I spend 4 hours out there trying to get the stupid thing to start?
I did come out and check on you.
Now, I got to preface this by saying, it's a riding lawnmower. Just drop my phone. I have a riding lawnmower. Ooh, he has a riding lawnmower. It was given to us. It was old. I fixed it up. It was free.
Yeah, our friend who has a gardener gave you
yeah.
his.
He's like, I have one just sitting. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah, fixed it. It runs great until it breaks, and then I fix it. Anyway, I'm at the I need to fix it stage. So I didn't mow. So I'm frustrated. So instead, I'm just going to tell you about people that die from lawnmowers.
Oh, great.
It's actually not that bad. Only 70 to 90 people die directly from their lawnmower.
How?
Which is pretty bad if you think about it. They get run over. It rolls over on them. They get
what?
They get cut. Yeah. That's actually a lot if you think about
that
it.
That is a lot. That's more than sharks.
85,000 are injured annually, with 6,400 sustaining serious injuries.
From a lawnmower?
A significant portion of these injuries, including amputations, involve what? Children.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Like they just lay on the ground and their whoever's doing it doesn't see them and runs them over?
I don't know.
How many pets die, I wonder?
I don't. Who cares? They're pets. We can get more.
I can name off a couple movies
people
right now.
People are already screaming at me.
There is a horror movie where the guy uses a lawnmower to kill people.
Over 9,000 children under the age of 18 are injured annually from lawnmowers.
Oh, gosh. That's awful.
Rollover accidents are prevalent in riding lawnmowers.
What does that mean?
It rolls over on you. Now, we obviously don't live in the mountains. We live in the flattest place on
Earth.
No,
wait, here, I have a question. Okay. Raising my hand.
Oh, good, yeah.
When you mean roll over, does that mean that they're riding on the lawnmower and it rolls over?
Yes, because you're on a slope
and
it tumbles
okay.
on top of you.
I was thinking roll over like it rolls over the top of you.
No.
Okay.
Well, I suppose you could do that too, but riding mowers can overturn, especially when operating at speed on uneven terrain or slopes. Just YouTube mower accidents.
No, don't do
and
that.
It's horrific.
It's almost like a four-wheeler. Like when you're driving a four-wheeler or a three-wheeler
yeah,
up
absolutely.
On an embankment
yeah.
and then it just rolls
All
over.
I see constantly is people, YouTube videos, the dad in the dad bod because he's not wearing a shirt because that's what you want to do. Now, I got to preface this by saying when I go out and mow on a riding mower, especially during the summertime. Well, Daniel, how do you prepare safely to mow? Well, I do the right thing. Usually I make like a alcoholic beverage first.
He does.
And then I go, I think I should mow the lawn. Right?
Yes.
And then I get dressed and I put on a bathing suit, swimsuit. And then I put on my working out in the yard flip-flops.
He does.
Okay,
oh,
because
God.
You got to have a set. You don't want to mow barefoot, although I have. I also disabled the switch where if you get up off the mower, the seat has springs and it will kill the engine. I disabled that.
Oh,
that way I can
God.
Hop off the mower without the engine dying.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Daniel.
Yeah, that's the first thing I disconnected immediately.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, because what if something's in the way? What if there's, like, a ball?
And, you know.
And I try and push the ball out of the way with the mower because I don't want to get off because that's too much work. But anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I don't shut it off. I even empty the canisters with the grass with the thing running.
I know, because I try to talk to you and we can't hear each other.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
So, anyway, like I said, I don't know how these accidents happen is what I was trying to say.
I can't believe you haven't been in an accident. I can't believe you have all 10 of your toes.
Yeah, I try to keep my toes away from the blades while they're spinning.
That really bothers me that
Which
you
part?
Broke the switch, the kill switch.
No, I just unhooked the connector.
But
the
that
wiring
bothers
connector.
Me because... Our kid is supposed to be mowing as well.
Well, I'll put it back on if he learns how to mow.
He does know how to mow. You just don't let him do it.
Oh, and then here's the other thing. I'm cheap. I don't want to buy a new battery for it. So half the time I have to jump start the riding mower, right, from a jump start pack.
How often do you do the mower? How often do you mow our yard?
Well, now I'm going to mow it a lot because we're watering it and
yeah,
it's hot.
Yeah, so it's like once a week.
Yeah, once every week or two.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it takes like 17 hours.
Hence the adult beverage.
I also put in all of our landscaping because I'm weird. I did everything. Did all the outside wiring.
Nobody
cares.
No.
But
is
I'm
that
saying
all your
that
facts?
That's why I fix it. One extra thought, in case you're worried about what you should be worried about. Lawnmowers kill more people than bears, sharks, or alligators each year.
Okay.
So if you're worried about moving to, say, Louisiana or Florida or Mississippi or Alabama or someplace that's got a lot of gators.
And bears.
Watch out for the lawnmowers is what I'm trying to say. So if there's a lot of lawnmowers, it's probably how you're going to die. Right?
Because you're not going to die from an
alligator. Suburban California, suburbia, That's where you're going to die because that's where the most lawnmowers are.
People do not do their own lawns.
Well.
They don't.
They should.
They should. Sure. No, but then it'll put all the sweet guys out of business. So
the
no.
Sweet guys?
Yeah, the nice landscapers.
Well, I don't know.
The neighbors are always really nice.
Yeah. That's probably why their lawn looks good, too, and ours looks like poop.
Yep. 100%.
You seen the robot mowers?
Yes, I have. They're like the house
yes.
of vacuums.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to really have like a perfect yard, perfect lawn. Your life is almost too perfect at that point. If you can have a robot mower... I don't know.
Or if you can
I know
have...
it's programmable and all that stuff, but...
Or if you can have fake grass.
Well, then you don't need a lawnmower at all.
No, I mean, then your life is too perfect.
Okay, but here's the problem with that. We have dust.
Yeah, you have to get
and,
out there
and
spray it off.
And bugs and things. And, yeah, so how do you get that clean? Whereas if it's organic...
A leaf blower.
What do you blow it to?
The neighbor's grass.
Blow it to the neighbors. And then that neighbor blows it back into yours and you just trade off.
It's a war.
I don't know.
War
anyway,
the neighbors.
What I'm trying to say is.
What are you trying to say?
These are first world problems. And in the first world, our biggest enemy is our lawnmower. That's what I'm trying to say.
Not sharks
obesity,
or bears.
Nope. Obesity.
Or alligators.
Obesity and lawnmowers. Those are our biggest enemies.
Okay. We should... tell our congressman or our governor.
What? That we need more? No, we don't need more laws. No, we should be allowed to be obese on our riding lawnmower without any safety equipment, barefoot, no shirt on, drunk.
Just run into your pool.
And just, yeah, absolutely. Crashing into stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's how people become successful on YouTube.
And hopefully have life insurance and medical insurance.
No, you usually just have amputations and lose parts. You don't usually die.
All right. Well, thanks for kicking off summer with that factoid,
sir. Oh, you're welcome. Everyone go out there and mow barefoot like I do. Well, I'm going to tomorrow if I get the thing fixed.
Daniel.
Melissa.
You ready for my case?
As always, no.
This is the case of James and Beverly Jean Long.
Beverly and Jean Long.
No, it's James. It's his name.
James?
Yeah, actually he went by Jim. And then Beverly Jean is the wife's name. And she actually went by Jean. So I'm going to refer to her as Jean. So that was a great question.
Okay.
James or not question, and Jean. Misunderstanding. Yeah.
Basically pointed out that I already wasn't listening.
Basically.
So it's fine.
Well, on January 23rd, 2003, a call came into the Butts County 911 call center in Georgia around 9:45 p.m. On the line was Beverly Jean Long, who went by Jean, and she was hysterical, shouting into the phone that her husband, 53-year-old Jim, was on fire.
Oh.
She was screaming, "Fire! My husband's burned to death. Please hurry. Oh, dear God, please help me. I told him not to put that in there. Wow. That is the recorded version.
All right.
But other outlets said she was saying, oh, my God, he's burning. I need help. You know, the things you would say if somebody's on fire.
Sure.
Basically.
Can we address the place? When you come into like a town or a county,
mm-hmm.
and they have like slogans like a great place to live, you know, things like that. Is their slogan?
Oh boy.
All the interesting things happen in the butts.
It was just probably, hopefully.
Is it, it's butts, it's, or butt county?
It's butts. B-U-T-T-S.
Butts.
Mm-hmm. Butts.
All right. More than one.
There's a couple butts in butts. That was dumb. Nope. You're rubbing off on me too much, babe.
All right.
Okay. So Jean was telling the dispatcher that the couple's shop and home were engulfed in flames. She was able to grab a cell phone and was sitting in her Jeep a safe distance away from the burning structure. But her husband of almost 5 years was still trapped inside. Once on the scene, firefighters and emergency medical personnel realized rather quickly that the situation was even more dire than expected. The Long's shop was located in Jackson, Georgia, and was a large metal airplane hangar filled with vehicles and equipment used for Jim's tree trimming business. Including containers filled with many different types of combustibles.
Sure.
Including gasoline, kerosene, and propane.
Sure, sure.
There was no controlling this fire. All firefighters could do was to try to keep the flames under control and from spreading past the structure and the house. So let me paint a picture of this property, okay? It's
okay.
Like, obviously, it's a big property in rural Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Has this huge metal hangar. And then next to it is a two-story structure where the bottom is like a garage.
Yeah.
And the top is the living quarters.
Okay.
And so all of this was on fire.
Oh, boy.
So the firefighters knew that it was way too hot and dangerous for any rescuer to enter the hangar to look for Jim. They had to be patient and made the choice to put the fire almost completely out before entering the hangar. So around midnight, the flames were all but extinguished, and firefighters were able to cut a large hole in the side of the metal hangar, giving them access to the remaining fire inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I am assuming it's full of equipment, and the equipment's on fire, too.
Yes, everything inside was on fire.
Which is very hard to put out. Like, car fires are really hard to put out once they really get going.
Right.
So then
and there
imagine,
was a vehicle in there.
I think
there was one or two vehicles in there.
I can only imagine. That would be very difficult to put out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really scary for them. Found lying nearby the access hole were the charred remains of a body, who they assumed was Jim Long, but he was unrecognizable. He was burned to the bone in some areas.
Oof.
Ugh, so sad. Now at the scene, Jean was located sitting in her vehicle parked down the driveway, and she did that so that she was out of the freezing cold temperatures because a cold front had moved into Georgia, because we're talking about the end of January.
Yeah.
And it was below freezing temperatures.
Sure.
So she couldn't just hang out outside. Even though there's a fire, it would probably warm up the area a little bit, but that's kind of
morbid. Yeah, but
morbid.
Then you have to be kind of close to get that heat.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you don't know what's going to explode, so you wouldn't want to be near it.
Jean was hysterical, but was able to tell rescuers what she remembered happening. Jim had asked her to help him bring in a kerosene heater into the shop, into the hangar, and he was worried that the pipes might freeze. He poured what she assumed was kerosene into the smudge pot, and it exploded.
Okay.
Do you know what a smudge pot is?
Yeah, vaguely. It's like a kind of a commercial-ish big heater thing you light.
Yeah, it's used in orchards when there would be a freeze that would come in, say in Florida.
Yeah.
They would light these smudge pots and it would just radiate heat through the top part that they call a salamander.
Oh, okay.
I did so much research on smudge pots, by the way, or kerosene heaters. There's all these different names for them. So
yeah,
I'm probably going to call it a bunch of different things. Jim's jacket caught on fire, and she tried to help him take off his jacket, but the fire spread rapidly over his body. Jean was able to grab Jim's cell phone, but in the chaos, he was waving his arms around, and he hit Jean in the face and knocked the phone out of her hand. Unable to retrieve the phone, she left Jim in the hangar and ran to the house, which was right next door. Like I said, it was a two-story, and the house in the living area was upstairs. So Jean ran up the stairs and tried the landline, but she said that it wasn't working. She couldn't get a dial tone. So Jean found her cell phone on the kitchen counter, grabbed it, ran back down the stairs, got in her Jeep, moved the car a safe distance away, and then called 911.
Was the house on fire too?
It was beginning to catch on fire. Because they had a shop down below the house.
Oh, never mind.
So everything was kind of spreading.
I was thinking there was a separate house, but it's all one building.
It's all one building.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the
hangar
is right next to it. And I think they had a way that you could get from the hangar into the shop, which was down below the living area.
So I know this seems kind of easy to say now, but I'm really surprised if he has all that equipment that he doesn't have at least one fire extinguisher. On hand, usually by a door, entry door, typically.
Right.
I got them all over for that very reason, because you only have seconds. Otherwise, it's too late.
That's true. But if you were to catch on fire, I don't know if I would be in the right mindset to know to go get a fire extinguisher, unless maybe you were telling me to go get a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, if I'm on fire, go find a fire extinguisher.
Okay. Okay.
If
deal.
If you can't, that would be the quickest, most efficient way to put me out or anything.
Okay.
Because
samesies.
It'll smother the fire immediately.
All right. Note to self. Actually, you need to show me where those are then.
They're all over. I even got them in the cars.
No, I know there's one in the car.
Because car fires are common.
It's scary. Fire is so scary.
Yeah.
So unpredictable.
And water won't necessarily put out fire, especially like an accelerant type fire like that. So it starts going, it probably won't do much unless you have a ton of water.
They just
like you
needed
really
to
can smother it.
They said they just needed to wait and let it.
Oh yeah,
kind of
at that point, there's not much they're gonna do.
And they're scared that there's more things in there that are gonna explode.
Yeah, you got propane bottles and things like that. Those will explode and blow a building apart. Good times.
Jean was taken to the hospital for an evaluation. Her hair was singed and she had a bloody lip and an abrasion on her chin, but no real serious injuries, no burns on her hands or singed clothing. When she had told them that she had tried to put the fire out while wearing gloves. And so those caught on fire and she took them off. And then it was just too out of control. She couldn't help him anymore. Jean was also given a sedative to calm her down. Now, back at the scene, investigators began photographing the area and Jim's body. What caught their attention immediately was the position of his charred remains. Now, when someone is engulfed in flames, their body posture moves into a boxer's pose, which resembles a boxer's defensive stance. So they'll have clenched fists and arms and their legs are flexed, which is caused by muscle shrinkage and dehydration caused by the intense heat exposure.
Ugh.
I know we've talked about this before on another episode that we did where the person was found in a boxer's pose.
That's terrible to think, though.
Oh, I know. But Jim's body was lying in a supine position. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Flat on his back. And his arms were up above his head. Were you going to say something because you breathed in?
No.
Oh. Okay.
I don't think so.
He was lying on three different aerosol cans. One under his head, one under his back, and one under Jim's right leg.
He's lying on top of aerosol cans?
Yes.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now, could these aerosol cans have been the accelerator?
Well, yeah.
Is what they're thinking.
It could be, sure.
There were also some strange burn patterns around Jim's body, almost like a pore pattern, and there was some cracked concrete. They also found what they believed was a pore pattern from his body to the exit of the hangar, which was interesting.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Now, in the hangar, the remnants of the kerosene heater were found, and it was pretty much intact. But there was a section of the chimney that had blown open, but that was it. I mean, it was charred, but it was intact.
Okay.
Plus, a hammer was found lying near Jim's head.
Ooh.
The workshop housed everything Jim needed and used for his tree trimming business, including tools, equipment, tanks of acetylene, tanks of propane, and containers filled with liquid fuels. Plus, there was paper, rags, and clothing. So it was almost like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. Acetylene bottles are for an acetylene torch. So you have pure oxygen tanks and then acetylene. So if you have a cutting torch, it mixes those two together. It makes ultra, ultra high heat. So you can cut under pressure.
Like cut metal?
Yeah, with fire.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what an acetylene torch typically is used for.
Okay.
Cutting and or you can heat things up.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I've used them from time to time. You can use propane and oxygen, but it's not as intense, so acetylene's better.
Because it's intense.
Yeah, but they're in very, very heavy, thick-walled steel bottles.
Okay, because it didn't say anything about any other explosions going off. It was just an explosion from the kerosene heater.
Yeah.
So once the fire started, everything else in the space was just waiting to ignite.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why this fire was so hot.
Plus, it's a metal building and everything in it is metal. So once that stuff gets glowing red from the heat,
mm-hmm.
it just keeps everything super hot. So it'd take forever to cool that place down. Not a great idea living above a shop like that.
Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
It's efficient, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's always a risk, of course. I mean, ideally, you have a separate garage from your dwelling.
Like in the back.
If I had to design a house, I would have the garage detached from the house.
Mm.
That way, if your car catches on fire, or there's an electrical short or something, and or you have paint, you have all these things that could catch fire.
Right.
You lose the shop, but you don't lose your dwelling. You don't lose your house.
Okay.
But since most garages are attached, then
happens.
You
walk.
Yeah. Or at least you could do like a breezeway, so you could come in and still be covered. So if it's pouring down rain or you're in a rainy area or something like that, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, someday if we're able to build a house.
Yeah.
And to the investigators, one of the strangest things of all was that the door to the house was locked. So they couldn't even get into the house.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't she run out of the house?
She did. Yes. So Jean must have physically locked the door when she exited the house to get in the Jeep and drive to the safe distance away.
While it's burning.
While it's burning. Yeah.
That's an odd thing to do.
Yeah. So why lock the house, or why lock the door of a house that was catching on fire?
Right. Why even close the door?
Yeah. Just let it go.
Just run out.
Now, an arson canine was brought onto the property the next day by the state fire marshal's office. An arson canine is used to sniff out accelerants. And the dog alerted its handler to where Jim's body had been found, meaning it smelled accelerants in that area. Jim's autopsy report stated that despite the horrific death that Jim must have suffered, there was very little soot and dirt in his throat, and very little smoke damage to the lungs, meaning Jim did not actually breathe in enough soot and smoke to cause smoke inhalation, which in turn would have killed him.
So obviously there was enough of his body left that he still had lungs.
Yes.
Like he wasn't burnt to the bone.
in some areas that were exposed, say like his face or his hands.
Right.
I'm thinking that those were probably burned to the bone, but he was wearing a heavy coat and all that stuff.
And he was laying on the ground. So the fire is going to tend to exist a couple of feet above the ground, always going up.
Right, like on top of him.
Right.
Because he was lying on
concrete.
That's
what they say. I mean, I don't know. I've never been in a fire. Hopefully never are. But they say you should always lay flat on the ground and crawl, even if the whole room's on fire, because you might actually crawl underneath the fire.
Right. I've heard that many times.
So you might survive. Probably not, but possible.
Mm-hmm. Also, there were not enough chemicals in Jim's blood to suggest that he had died from the fire. So it wasn't the fire that had killed him.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't even the smoke.
Was it the hole in his skull from the hammer?
Dude.
What? Sorry.
But Jim did have multiple rib fractures, a fractured skull.
Ah.
With three fracture lines radiating out of the same hole. So this was blunt force trauma. BFT.
Oof.
Yeah. Jim's cause of death was listed as thermal injuries and blunt force head trauma. And his death is listed as homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people who die in fires die of smoke inhalation as opposed to the actual flames of the fire. Now, if Jim was murdered, there was only one person police believed could have done this. Who, Daniel?
The neighbor.
Oh, my gosh.
I have no idea. Tell me.
His wife.
It's always the wife.
His wife, Jim.
They say it's always, they say it's the husband. It's not the husband. It's always the wife.
Oh, well, it was his wife, Jean, that they're thinking did this to him. Now, Jim and Jean had known one another from high school in Kansas. But after graduation, both married other people. Jim had four children with his first wife, and Jean and her husband never had kids. After divorcing their spouses, they re-met and sparks flew. The couple were married in March of 1999 and moved to Georgia. For reasons I don't really know, I do believe one of his daughters lived in Georgia.
Oh.
But there's not a lot of information on their marriage.
Probably to get out of Kansas.
Maybe. Maybe it just wasn't for them anymore.
The tornadoes.
Oh, is that where you were going with that?
I don't know.
Okay. Jim continued being a truck driver and started a tree trimming business in Jackson. The couple were very loving and social within the community, or their new community, and really became active within their new church. And all seemed well within the long marriage.
So these are church-going folk.
They are.
All right.
Loving, devoted, church-going folk. In Georgia.
Well, then this must have been an accident. Okay. Because no one that goes to church would murder each other.
Oh, stop. Now, Jean was brought into the police station for her first official interview right after she got out of the hospital.
Okay.
She told the investigator that Jim had started filling the smudge pot with kerosene from a red plastic can and it exploded. She tried to help him, but the flames spread quickly, forcing Jean to leave Jim and try to get help. The investigator wasn't really buying Jean's story and began catching her in small inconsistencies within her story. Jean told him that she did believe she saw Jim hit his head on a metal workbench while he was flailing about and fell backward onto the shop floor. Now, this was something she had never said before, but we're talking like 6 hours afterwards.
So he goes to fill the old smudge pot and catches on fire and immediately thrashes around, wham, just smashes into things with his head.
Yeah, it was the side of his head.
He runs into a hammer with his head. He runs into all these things that do very, very significant bone damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
Okay. She watches all this unfold.
Well, not necessarily.
Wouldn't you drag me away from the fire?
if you're flailing about and it's chaotic.
Just grab a foot and drag me away.
Okay, so she was 5'5", 120 pounds, and he's a big guy.
Okay.
So I don't think that she
big
could.
Or heavy fella?
Big and heavy fella.
Big and heavy fella.
Yeah,
okay.
He's 53, right. Trims trees, he's a truck driver.
All right.
Like, he's a sure. He's man, you know? Like,
yeah.
Well, that doesn't make you a man, but it's like a man's man.
53-year-old guy is heavy.
Sure. Yes.
Bigger fella. Okay. All
right. And pictures that it's I've plausible. Seen, he's bigger. He's a bigger guy.
Okay.
Happy. Jolly.
Yeah.
The investigator asked Jean about a red plastic fuel can that was found basically undisturbed outside the entrance to the workshop.
Outside?
Yes, right outside the door.
Oh, okay.
Jean said she had no idea how the can got outside the hangar. She didn't know it was there.
Yeah.
I remember when I said there was a burn pattern from his body
right.
out the door, and then there's just happens to be this red can sitting outside the door.
Mm.
When asked about the door being locked, Jean said it must have been a force of habit. She locked it because she always did.
It's plausible.
Yeah, it is. With the investigator taking a more aggressive approach to questioning Jean, he began to ask her why she didn't seem very upset. Why wasn't she crying with big old tears running down her face? And Jean said that she was extremely upset, that Jim was the love of her life, but she was just trying to remember everything that happened. And you can totally see in the interview video that the investigator did not believe that Jim's death was an accident. He didn't. He got super aggressive with Jean.
Yeah.
He just wasn't buying it. Jean did agree to take a polygraph exam, and
okay.
she failed.
Yeah.
She agreed to take another one.
And failed.
She failed that one too.
But what? How does that help them at all?
I think because they can say, well, you failed. You failed it.
What if she passed?
You're lying. Then
it's not admissible.
No, it's not admissible.
It can't be used against her. So
it can't even be used in a grand jury.
Yeah. So, I mean, she may as well say, sure, I'll take one. What difference does it make?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if she passed.
I mean, don't take one. She shouldn't have taken one in the first place. But people don't really know.
Maybe she thinks she could pass it.
Maybe. So soon, investigators believed that Jean had somehow struck Jim in the side of the head with a blunt object, possibly that hammer, dragged his body to an open area, poured accelerant on his body, and then lit Jim on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a 5'5", 120-pound middle-aged woman who dragged this big fella a few feet to this location.
Yeah.
I don't know if that could physically happen. But we have heard of moms lifting cars off their kids and things happening when you get that rush of adrenaline. So who knows, right?
Yeah, she could have done it.
While Jean and the family mourned the loss of Jim, investigators with Butts County built a case around Jean. And the day after Jim was laid to rest, Jean was arrested for his death.
Seems appropriate.
Charged with arson and murder.
Oof.
As Jean sat in the county jail, her family and friends began a campaign to get her out because they all believed that she had nothing to do with Jim's death, that he had died a horrific death by accident.
They didn't think any of it was strange.
No, even his kids, because she loved him too much. Like
yeah.
Their marriage to everybody just seemed perfect, and she would never have done that to Jim.
But as a child, wouldn't you want to know, like, okay, wait. Why do you think she did it? And they're like, well, because of the following things, which maybe they wouldn't tell them exactly.
Yeah, you kind
of
keep it close to the chest a little bit.
Huh.
Oh, but we'll get into it.
Yeah.
So one of Jim's friends and close neighbor even told the authorities that he believed Jim had accidentally added gasoline to the smudge pot and not kerosene. Jim had a habit of putting the liquids in the same gas cans without marking them.
Mm.
He had even warned Jim about the safety issue, but Jim continued doing it.
Yeah, typically you put gasoline in red cans. They are colored for a reason. Kerosene, diesel is typically in a yellow can.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it just depends.
Mm. Within days, Jean was out of jail. Her pastor and the church had raised the money needed for her bond. And her family found a defense attorney who agreed to meet with Jean, believing her story immediately. The first thing her defense team did was to bring on their own independent fire investigator, a nationally known and revered investigator named John Lentini. He told Jean that in his professional opinion, the investigation into the fire and its causes was the worst he had ever seen. Very elementary and old school. And this is in 2003.
Wow.
Plus, there was no motive. Jim's life insurance policy was worth less than $40,000. So money wasn't a motive.
Wow.
But we've heard of people killing each other for $10,000.
True. But then usually there's less stuff. You know what I mean?
Like not a business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I have to say, I was talking about colors of fuel cans. There's red and yellow, which are the most common. So red's for gasoline, yellow's for diesel. Kerosene is blue.
Oh,
didn't know that.
Okay.
Now, around here, we don't really use kerosene because we're not in a very cold climate. And kerosene's usually used for heating oil, that sort of stuff.
That makes sense.
And we just don't need it as much. So typically around here, we see red and yellow because just, you know.
Yeah. And there was never any doubt that the couple had a good marriage and friendship. There wasn't mumblings of fighting or abusive behavior, just love and companionship.
So why did she kill him?
But the state decided there was enough reasonable doubt to take Jean to trial for the death of Jim. And the murder trial began in May of 2004. The state believed that Jim was angry that Jean had been spending a lot of time back in Kansas recently with her family. I guess there were rumors that Jim was leaving Jean. The couple must have gotten into an argument that night. Maybe Jim had told Jean that he was going to leave her and even possibly struck Jean. That's why she had the bloody lip and the abrasion on her chin. Jean, in possible self-defense, struck Jim with an object. Maybe that hammer, but there was nothing found on that hammer, by the way.
Oh.
There's no blood or anything
found. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Fractured his skull and knocked him unconscious. Jean then dragged Jim to the area he was found, poured an accelerant all over his body, and lit him on fire, and then left, waiting to call 911.
Or is it possible that they did get in a fight, and then she thought she killed him, or he was going to die, so she wanted to cover it up by burning him?
Right, that too.
Yeah.
Like a self preservation.
So then why would
thing.
There be a hammer next to him if the hammer wasn't actually used?
There was tools everywhere.
Oh, okay, never mind.
There wasn't really any method to his madness within this hangar. He just had stuff everywhere. But
now,
he was one of those guys that knew where all of his stuff was and didn't make sense to any of us.
I was going to say, like, that would be me. And I know growing up, lots of people and adults, people that are very, like, tool people and they build things. You do know where you left something because you have, there is method to the madness.
Yes.
But a wife or anyone else walks in and goes, oh God, this is insane. And you're like, no, it's not. Don't touch anything. I know where everything is.
You do. And then I end up putting everything that you've used in for some sort of project. I put it all into some sort of box.
Yeah. And then I don't know where the box is.
I know. I do. I know where the box is. Then she took the red fuel can with her and dropped it outside the exit.
Mm-hmm.
And then let him burn for some time before calling 911.
I'm sure the responding fire department or whoever it was that came out could tell that this thing has been going for a while. From the time she called to they get there, they go, now, wait a minute. If this just started and we got here and whatever, let's just say 5 minutes. There's no way it could have gone from it just started to 5 minutes and be this bad. I wonder if there was that. Okay.
Possibly, but everything that was in that shop was combustible. Yeah. So they said that once the fire started, it wasn't going to stop. Like right. Everything was just immediately catching on fire. It didn't just stay on him for a while and then spread, especially because he was panicked.
Right.
And he's running around, probably lighting other things on fire in the process.
Right.
Okay, so that's why Jim did not have much soot or smoke in his lungs, because he was barely breathing, because he was unconscious, or he was possibly already dead, hopefully. Ugh. They even showed the jury video of Jean's interview with the investigator, showing the inconsistencies in her story and lack of so-called normal reaction to the death of her husband. The two polygraph exams were not admissible in court because of the lack of scientific evidence that these machines even work. A neighbor said that she had gotten home before 9 p.m. and heard an explosion soon after. Now, Jean called 911 around 9:45. So why did she wait so long to call 911?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think I think they probably knew that. Like, hey, she called. We get out here. Clearly, there was a lot of time that elapsed.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's what they just said. It took her a long time to call 911.
Yes. But also in that kind of situation as a neighbor, does she know for sure that what time she got home and for sure what time she heard the explosion?
Right.
Because sometimes you're home and you're just messing around with things and 45 minutes have gone by in a matter of seconds, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, okay, but the state is trying to prove that Jean hit Jim in the head, then doused him in an accelerant while he was unconscious, and then lit him on fire. So where did the explosion sound come from that the neighbor heard?
Yeah, there would have to be quite a bit of fuel vapor to really make a big boom.
Right, but they're saying she just poured an accelerant over the top of him and lit him on fire.
There would be no noise, not really. It'd be more of a boom.
Exactly. Like, so what the neighbor heard was the smudge pot explosion.
But that could have been after. It could have been post-fire.
After she already... Oh.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, the fire reached a propane bottle or another tank, and then that blew up. Meanwhile, the fire could have started prior.
Dang it, I didn't even think of that. All right, good job.
It traveled to something that blew up. But the blowing up wasn't the initial start.
All right. So the landline phone that Jean had said that she had tried to use to call 911 was working when investigators tried it.
Oh.
And all the utilities were still working, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay, so they were able to put this house out. Sort of, or the structure.
I mean, there was a shell left, but somehow the utilities didn't burn.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Because normally all
That's
the wiring would have melted. And.
But everything still worked.
Yeah.
Especially because it was so hot. You would think that all the plastic would melt.
There's the insulation. Doesn't take much heat. It'll melt. The copper wire will touch and short everything out, and then phone's dead, electrical shorts out, that pops all the breakers, so on and so forth. Everything just kind of...
Well, days later, it was the defense's turn to plead their case. A fire investigator, John Lentini, was called to the stand. He told the jury how bad the investigation had been and that it was the worst he had ever seen in his long career.
That's got to be pretty bad then.
John refuted any claim that Jim had been intentionally set on fire by Jean or anyone else for that matter. Jim's workshop was filled with flammable liquids and accelerants from top to bottom, that the explosion was full room involvement.
Okay.
That was a quote. That the pour pattern found by the other investigators was actually made by the heat of the fire, and it was not a pour pattern. other patterns found on the concrete floor were also misinterpreted. I think he's talking about what they thought was a poor pattern from the body out the door.
Mm.
He believed Jim had mistakenly poured gasoline in the heater and not kerosene or diesel. That the soot inside the smudge pot coated the metal base and acted as sort of a charcoal and never fully cooled down. The soot stayed hot. So it became very dangerous. When the gasoline was introduced, it immediately caught fire and blew up. The residue in the smudge pot reserve was tested and found to be gasoline and not kerosene.
Oh, okay.
So this was the physical evidence that proves that she's not guilty.
Okay. The end.
And any sort of low temperature heat will ignite gasoline, but kerosene needs more heat to catch.
Yeah.
He said this actually happens quite often that people do this.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that 1 gallon of gas equals the power of 20 dynamite sticks?
I know it's a lot. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty significant.
That was wild. And the red fuel can found outside the hangar door was tested, and that was filled with kerosene.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. So much for that theory.
But kerosene can also be used as an accelerant.
Yeah, but it won't blow up. It won't really take off like gasoline will.
But it could. Like if somebody's lying motionless, unconscious, or dead.
Yeah.
You pour the kerosene over, light it, there's time for it to burn, right?
So here's the difference. If you were to pour gasoline out on the floor, and there is, there's any sort of air. If you wait long enough, nothing's going to happen because it's all going to evaporate. Because gasoline boils at a very low temperature and it goes all into vapor. And there's almost no residue left over. Whereas kerosene or diesel will sit there for days and it won't really evaporate. And it has almost no vapor and almost no real significant smell because it's not vaporizing like gasoline will.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, like diesel, you could have a bucket of diesel and put it on the floor, come back 2 weeks later, and nothing's changed. If you have a bucket of gas, the temperature's real cold, you might have a little bit left, but most of it will evaporate. And then that vapor will dissipate, and then there's nothing left. That's the problem with stored gasoline, is gasoline goes bad because it turns.
I've heard you say that, like with the lawnmower or something. Oh, the gas is bad.
Yep, it'll turn. And then, of course, now our gasoline has basically sugar in it from the ethanol. So really what remains is the ethanol, and the gasoline vaporizes and disappears, leaving this residue, which clogs everything and ruins stuff. Fun times.
Yeah. I'm so impressed by you right now.
Yeah.
When the gasoline was introduced to the heater, it immediately ignited and blew up.
Yeah, that would be a terrible choice to pour gas into a hot heater.
Mm-hmm. Jim's jacket caught on fire, and Gene tried to help, but Jim panicked. During his panic state, Jim hit the side of his head on his metal workbench and then fell back onto the concrete unconscious. That's why his hands were above his head.
Hmm.
He just fell straight back. The fire that was already burning did the rest. Jim could have been dead moments after hitting his head, which I wrote here that if I was someone who knew and loved Jim, that's what I would be praying for.
Sure.
Like, I just hope he was gone.
Or at least knocked out.
Yeah. Poor Jim. Ugh. But Jim's skull and ribs could have fractured from the fire itself, from the extreme heat.
Mm-hmm.
Jim's clothing was tested for accelerants, and none were found. So he had not been doused in accelerant.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that burn pattern that they believed was a poor pattern was just from the fire being on his body.
Wouldn't the prosecution have done all these tests first before deciding to move forward with the case?
Okay, but you have to, as a jury member, you're either going to believe the prosecution's professional opinion from their fire investigators, or you're going to believe the guy that the defense hired, who is like a world-renowned fire expert.
Right. But if you did lab work on the clothing, it either has residue or it doesn't, right?
Yes, but I think you can justify it with their residue burned off, or there wasn't really enough clothing left to be tested accurately.
Okay.
Like, there's always ways to spin it, right?
Sure. Well, I guess so.
But
I don't know.
John, who was the defense's expert, he was running all of these tests. He was figuring all of this out.
Okay.
And like he had said, I mean, he really talked down about the investigation done by the state and the state of Georgia. The defense said that the reason Gene's statements were inconsistent was due to the sedative given to Gene at the hospital, because she went straight from the hospital to an interrogation, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And she was starting to recall things again. You're in such a traumatic state. You see the man that you love catch on fire. How do you come back from that?
I don't know. I don't know how you could be expected to have this very consistent, calm conversation and then not waver from that. I almost think that if you could, it would be suspicious.
Oh, if you said everything right.
Yeah, if you were like very calm and formed your words perfectly, to me, that would almost be more of a red flag than if you were all over the place, because you're not
Because that shows that you
straight.
Were practicing.
Right.
You were practicing what you were going to say. So it was almost like she was damned if she didn't, damned if she didn't.
A little bit.
The jury also saw the rest of the interrogation video, where the investigator leaves Jean alone after telling her that he believes that she had murdered her husband. And this is a tactic used by law enforcement to hopefully get the suspect to incriminate themselves on camera, right? It's like, I know you did this, blah, blah, blah. Walk out, see what happens. And Jean had no idea that there was a camera in there recording this. So Jean places her head in her hands and cries out, "Oh, God, help me. Help me have strength, God. You know I didn't do it. Give me the words I need to make him see that I didn't do this."
Oh, boy.
And it was, like, heartbreaking.
Oh, wow.
To hear her. And she is just sobbing in this video. It was really sad. Jean actually took the stand in her own defense, recounting the moments before and after Jim's death. And to the jury, she seemed believable. She was genuine. She was terrified, devastated, and she was just really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean basically said everything that she had said during her interrogation, that he was filling the smudge pot and it exploded. He was caught on fire. She tried to help him, but she couldn't. So she left to hopefully try to get help. That was it. That's what happened.
Okay.
And that there was no dial tone when she tried the house phone, and that she must have locked the door out of habit. After 8 days of testimony by law enforcement, experts, friends, family, and Jean, the case was handed over to the jury. Less than 3 hours later, Beverly Jean Long was found not guilty of all charges. She left that courtroom a free woman. And Jim's death was ruled an accident and not a murder.
Oh, wow.
You surprised?
Yeah.
Interesting fact. A neighbor named Frank Howard came forward. He was a friend of the couple, and his son was actually married to one of Jim's daughters. He told the investigators that Jim was very careless with the fuel in his workshop. Jim often made the dangerous mistake of putting kerosene in gasoline cans. He had seen him do this.
Oh.
Frank did admit that he had borrowed one of Jim's kerosene cans and might have returned it to him full of gasoline.
Oh.
Yeah. Investigators did say that Frank kept kind of inserting himself into the investigation, and he would ask bold questions. And at one point, Frank claimed that Jim had been abusive toward Jean and that she was planning on leaving him. Obviously, a statement like that would give law enforcement some pause, right?
Sure.
Now, some believe that this was the motive. Others think that Frank and Jean could have been having an affair and Frank killed him to be with Jean. Like he purposely switched the kerosene and the gasoline. But no one else has stepped forward to corroborate Frank's story about Jim being abusive to Jean.
Yeah.
Oh, and then
I think that's a stretch.
So a month after the fire, Frank actually committed suicide, leaving a cryptic note that simply said, "I'm sorry."
What?
Leaving those to wonder, was he responsible for Jim's death? Is that why he killed himself? Had he filled the kerosene can with gasoline on purpose, knowing that Jim would use the liquid to fill the smudge pot? Now, to this day, Frank's seemingly over-involvement in the case has never been explained, leaving those who worked on this case divided. Some still believe Jean killed Jim. Others believe Frank and Jean plotted the murder together. And others believe, most people believe, that Jim's horrific death was an accident. But we'll never know. Hmm. Crazy, huh?
The suicide is kind of makes you wondering, though. Leaves you wondering.
It does. And I think that's really what gave them pause to this whole thing. Like, well, what did Frank have to do with this if he took his own life only a month after the fire, especially because he'd been kind of inserting himself into the investigation?
Right.
And showing up to the house when it was being looked at by the insurance company and things like that.
Hmm.
He just kind of randomly show up and start asking questions.
Well, okay, so then the other question would be, what if the alternate outcome was the outcome? Meaning she was found guilty of whatever, second-degree murder, first-degree murder, arson, whatever they ended up, were hoping to get her on.
Uh-huh.
Would Frank still commit suicide?
Well, the trial and her non-conviction happened over a year after.
Oh, after he killed. Oh, no, you did say that a month later.
Yeah, so it was only a month later that he killed himself. Okay. Yeah. I know, it's interesting, right?
Yeah.
But they were kind of family. So I think Frank did have a special interest in Jim and Jean and their relationship and his death because his son was married to Jim's daughter.
Yeah.
So they were family.
Well, I suppose it is possible that he knew Jim was careless.
He did.
And he, whatever, he liked Jean or who knows, and did something. So in reality, Jean could have no clue and think it was just a horrific accident.
Oh, that's true.
And then, so she literally is living her life going, it's terrible what happened. But then now, knowing this, wouldn't she in the back of her mind go, oh, God, I wonder if Frank did something, like took advantage essentially of Jim's carelessness?
Yes. But I also think that Frank maybe had some guilt thinking that he had done this on accident, that it wasn't actually Jim, that he had messed up and put gasoline and kerosene.
Oh, that's a good thought.
Yeah.
Is that all this was his fault?
Right. And so he was living with that guilt.
Oh, okay.
That he had accidentally killed his friend.
I like that. So he didn't purposely do it. He did it and then didn't even think about the fact that, hey, this might happen.
Right.
And then it happened.
Or he's doubting himself, like, oh crap, did I put gasoline in that can?
Yeah.
Because Jim had kerosene and gasoline in red cans.
Okay, then that actually makes more sense. I think that's what happened.
I kind of do, too.
Because that's my question. If someone is cold-hearted enough to either directly murder someone or cause someone to be no longer alive, mm-hmm. right? then they are strong enough to live on after that happens. Right?
Okay.
Because they kind of are getting their way. So why would you commit suicide?
Right.
That's my point.
Plus, there was no physical evidence.
Right. So really, the suicide is misery and guilt. But if you consciously did something to try and kill someone, then you're making that choice on purpose. So you would, it wouldn't make sense for you to do that and then commit suicide unless all of a sudden you grew like a conscience. So I'm with you. I think this ate him apart very quickly, and he committed suicide thinking, right, oh my God, I think I might be responsible for his death because I poured gasoline back in this thing that he had kerosene in, and I bet he grabbed it thinking it was kerosene, dumped it in the smudge pot, and the thing just blew up, and now he burned to death.
And I did try to find information on Frank Howard to see maybe if he was sick before he died, like maybe he was fighting some sort of terminal disease, or, but I couldn't find anything. It just said he committed suicide, so.
And he probably waited, didn't want to say anything, and then he saw what was happening to Jean, and it probably really ate him up.
Because it was immediately that investigators were like, they went after her. Yes.
Yeah, so then he's like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. Well, if I say something, I might go to prison. I don't want to go to prison. And then he's like, the guilt is too much for him.
Mm.
But he had no idea that she was going to be found innocent or not guilty. So in the end, he kills himself. She's
free.
Free. And everyone goes on about their lives.
It's just a sad story all the way around.
It is pretty sad. But it's that's really an interesting twist.
Okay, well, all my information on this case came from as many write-ups and articles that I could find. Plus, I watched a Forensic Files on this case and an episode of Accident, Suicide, or Murder.
Hmm.
And if you want to hear our unedited, unscripted, true thoughts on this case, you should stick around and listen to after the show. If you are enjoying our podcast, could you please go rate and review us on your streaming service?
Yes.
We also have a Patreon if you'd like to join, where we have extra bonus episodes every month. That's kind of fun over there.
Yeah. It's exciting. There's balloons. There's like
confetti.
Party tricks and stuff. Yeah, confetti. I don't know. Clearly, when you show up, You'll know it's exciting, is what we're trying to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And be careful.
For marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always a better option.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.